We try to play with great pace. We try to play with great pace. Ran a lot of pick and roll, pick and pop type actions. Oh, you'll see us play. Some people look at the guy next to him and say, what the hell was that shot? Hell, I could have been Gronk before Gronk was Gronk.
Welcome back to another edition of Bangarangs and Daggers, a Coronation podcast. My name is Patrick Gerhardt, your host, and with me is Kevin Knight again. Kevin, how are things out in D.C. for you?
Oh, they're good. We're, can Scott Frost move the game up to Friday, by the way? It's going to be rainy and cold here on Friday, and it's actually going to be, I think, I saw in the 60s on Friday, so let's move the game up. I don't really want to sit in the rain.
So. Yeah, here's the thing about that, though. Nebraska, while as even keel as they can be between the run and the pass, the rain favors the run, and I know Maryland does not have the run.
No, they don't have a lot of anything this season,
No, I'm trying to be nice.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm trying to be nice here. And, of course, we only went, 20 seconds into the podcast before we started talking about football?
True, but it's relevant this week, so.
It is relevant this week, but, just from here on out, you're new to the podcast. We try to go as long as possible on this one before we start talking about football.
Wait. I'm sorry. After this weekend, I'm having amnesia. What is football again? I don't know this sport.
Yeah. This is why we bring you on. You're smart. You catch quickly. You're better than I am on this.
I'm great at amnesia when it comes to football. So, let's move on.
I think some Nebraskans are getting better at amnesia. I'm still not great at it. But, no football after this weekend, right?
Exactly. No, there was a win in the Hoiberg era. So let's,
Nebraska ball, more importantly, is now 1-2. We got the first win, a good solid win, don't you think?
Yeah, South Dakota State's a good team. I mean, they were at the end of a road trip out to California on it. I will be honest about that. They were tired. They played like they were tired. But they're a good team. And we got a 90-73 home win for the first win of the Hoiberg era. And it was a good one.
Well, and here, not only was, South Dakota State a little bit tired, you could tell. But Nebraska, the team came out and they played hard. They played on fire. And even if South Dakota State was refreshed and played well, Nebraska was shooting to the point to where I still think they would have won that game. It would have been closer, but Nebraska, those players who were highly lauded coming in, who had three and four stars next to their name coming out of high school, who transferred in, they all played well.
Oh yeah, they did. And me highlighting South Dakota State being tired wasn't certainly anything to take away from Nebraska, too, by the way.
No, not at all. But it's a fact.
Yeah, exactly. So, but having said that, the first half was what I think you, Nate, and myself have all been harping on of when this team finally gets it. And, they had all week to practice and get some time to focus on the fact that they had those two losses and work to get better at it. And you saw them come out in the first half and just do exactly what Hoiberg ball is, push the ball, be fast, make sure you get those easy transition points. And it was a thing of beauty to see.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like there was a flow. There was a rhythm to how they were doing things. Now, again, South Dakota State kind of allowed that, but it was, if anything, that style of play, how they played against South Dakota State is, it not only gives the audience, the fans, kind of something to look forward to, an idea of how things are going to be, but it also does something for their psyche, that they can go out there as a team and perform as they should on the big stage. It's early in the season, But still, I mean, it's wins like these are going to do are going to pay dividends down the road for this team. And I think that's you know, it was perfect time, perfect everything. You know, I mean, it's funny because I was thinking earlier, after their second loss, you looked at a lot of these schools Nebraska's playing coming up, and after a while, things are going to get tough. The Big Ten's going to be tough. They play some not great teams in the non-con, but teams that could easily beat Nebraska. And a lot of people were telling me, you know, gosh, you know, I can't see these guys winning more than two or three games this season. But this win over South Dakota State, how they played, the style, the energy, the confidence, makes me feel like, and I mean, you please laugh if you're at home listening to this, but this is back to a 9-10-11 win team. You know, I mean, just based on fact to me, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think we saw a lot of promise out of tonight for what things can be moving forward with some more practice time, some more game experience, some more time with each other, just kind of getting how everybody plays. And some of the other things, too, that I saw, especially in the first half of the game, we actually saw a lot of guys hustling to the ball on rebounds. We still saw people breaking back for transition points, but you saw more than just one guy going after the ball, and that's something that we're really going to need if we actually want to get transition points with rebounds, is not just you know, having everybody rush down to try and get the easy transition point. You saw two, three guys going after the ball and grabbing the rebound on the defensive end, and that was really great. And another thing that I meant to mention in the podcast last week, but I forgot about it in my notes, and I did notice that they improved on it this week, is they stopped cheating quite as much on defense. That was something that they were particularly bad in the first two games, of leaving somebody open on the complete opposite side of the floor, and they were basically on the ball side of the lane, and they would throw it from the opposite end of the key all the way to the other guy, and he'd have a wide open three that he'd sink while they were still trying to get back, and they quit doing that quite so much. There's the right way to play help defense in that position, and there's the way to do it where you're just being lazy and cheating and you're going to get burned on the three-pointer. And they kept doing it, getting burned. And in particular, in the first half, when I was keeping an eye out for it against South Dakota State, they weren't doing that. And that was nice to see that Doc Sadler was kind of drilling them on that a little bit, I think.
Yeah, it was pretty much a 180 on how they played defense. How, you know, I mean, those first two games, it was just kind of very lax, very chill on kind of, you know, like, okay, I'm back on defense. I'm going to do what I can in my area that I'm supposed to do, and then hope to God somebody else gets the rebound and we go back and I know what to do on offense. You know, in this game, it was literally, we can't do that anymore. I got to throw everything I can into defense or we're going to lose again. Right?
Yeah, exactly. It was a nice change of pace to see them. Yeah, exactly. The one thing I was a little bit curious about, in the first half, they didn't do this in the second half, but in the first half, they did a lot of double teaming in ways that, if I had more time to go back and watch the game tape, I'd be curious to see if against a better, or at least a more rested team, rather, whether or not dishing the ball back out might have burned them a little bit. But they did a lot of double teaming down low to try and compensate for size. That has me a little bit curious how that might go against a different team necessarily. But it worked in the first half.
That's probably a little bit bigger, has a little bit more athletic ability down there.
Well, between that and, I mean, if they have the size down low and you have to double team to kind of compensate for that, are you going to get burned if they also have perimeter players, say, you know, like a Cassius Winston with Michigan State who can sink the three and make it hurt if, say, Xavier Tillman's going to dish it back out to him kind of thing?
Yeah.
Indiana, too, would be a good example.
Top players in the nation to compare it to.
Well, it's an easy point of reference, but also Indiana would be a great example because they work down low. Illinois actually is even better because they really love working a down to their post, popping it back out to their perimeter players. That's a better example. So I'll try to increase my Big Ten cred here, pointing out Illinois would be a better one.
You go with what you know. You know Michigan State. They're a phenomenal team. They're a phenomenal team to reference. They do so many things well. So in terms of kind of giving our listeners an idea of what to look for, you might as well go for the best.
Your word's not mine. I'm not going to disagree, though.
No, that's how it is. No, I mean, it was a good night. Cam Mack had 24 points. Burke and Cheatham, they both had 17. The rebounding was huge in that game. Everybody pulled down who started, pulled down big time. Even off the bench, the scoring wasn't that huge. You know, Cross came off again and had a great night with 10 points. But, the paint was a lot better utilized. From beyond the three, guys were just nailing stuff. As a whole, I think the team ended with like 48-49% from the field. Just an overall better performance from Nebraska. I think we stated earlier, we stated in previews, this was probably the best team technically that Nebraska's gone up against, and they showed up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Easley was the only one who didn't have a rebound in this game, and he played a minute and a half, roughly. I think he came in with like 120 to go, I want to say. Mm-hmm. So, one second. Let me make sure I get his name right. Udraago had one hell of a night with 12 rebounds. French dude. Yeah. Yvonne. He still looked like a freshman at times. He did get four personal fouls, but I mean, the guy's 17. If I could play like that when I was 17, I would have been on the varsity team in high school getting offers from a directional Michigan school, and I wouldn't have had any school bills, exactly. No, so to say. So, I'm not going to.
He's good. This is his first year in America playing the American style of play. And he's the guy's got a huge ceiling.
You name me an American big man who can play his freshman season without occasionally getting into foul trouble, and I will name you a non-existent human being.
Exactly. Oh, dude, if he was an American player, he'd be fouling out before the second half.
Yeah, it's crazy. He's going to be a good. Good threat for Nebraska down the road. The Big Ten should take note.
We just need one more of him.
Yeah. Maybe, an extra 2 or 3 inches on his clone wouldn't be bad. Exactly. But, beggars can't be choosers. He's a threat, that's for sure.
He's good, yeah. No, he's impressed early on. It's not hard to see his upside for the future. He's going to be a major part of Hoiberg's system going forward. He's still in a growing stage, but God, I can't see a ceiling as of right now. I mean, it'll happen at some point, but if Hoiberg, and again, I'm talking about Nebraska as a whole, if Hoiberg can develop like our past coaches have struggled to do, this guy is going to be a major threat, especially once Big Ten play starts, down the road. Not necessarily this year, but, sophomore, junior year, he should be something to contend with, to where we can actually play up against teams, big teams, like the Maryland's and Purdue's of the world.
Oh, yeah. We'll definitely be seeing his name as Big Ten Player of the Week more often than not when it comes to historically for Nebraska players down the road.
Yeah. So... No, it was a good game. I really can't think of anything else to say on that game. Again, it's third game of the year. Hoiberg got his first win. Next game is Southern University. They're 2-2. Both their wins are against teams that aren't even Division I schools. I haven't looked into them too much. We play them this Friday. I know they had single-digit wins last year. they're not going to – they shouldn't be much of a threat to Nebraska. Nebraska's had an entire week off in between games. So hopefully they've rested up enough. But, yeah, this Friday at 7 p.m. Central Time, Nebraska – game's not going to be televised. It'll be BTN Plus. And, yeah, I mean, it should be the second win of the Hoiberg era. But, I mean, I don't know a whole lot about him yet. I'm not sure if you do either. But looking forward, you know, I think Nebraska should have no reason but to win on Friday.
I definitely think so. I mean, I'll be honest, anybody who read my preview over the summer of them, I didn't honestly know they existed. I've been to Baton Rouge, I forget if it's 3 or 4 times for LSU football games with a friend of mine. And I was like, oh, there's a completely other D1 basketball school in that city that I had literally flown over when flying into the airport one time and didn't even realize it. But they did lose to New Mexico State, which I had to do a double take and try and remember if that was the one that Troy Bolton High School Musical was supposed to be being recruited by, or if that was University of New Mexico. But yeah, there's my gay credentials as the coordination writer for the week. So
I think that was New Mexico New Mexico University or University of New Mexico. They're the basketball school in that state.
Yeah, the Red Hawks, I believe. Not that movie series actually ever represents basketball well, but Red Hawk.
It's New Mexico, I think, Wolves and New Mexico State Aggies.
Okay. Yeah. So they beat the Aggies 79 they lost to the Aggies 79-63 last week on Thursday night. But they did beat Ecclesia, which I have no idea who they are other than they are not a D1 program.
They're
121-55.
They're a college. So they don't they don't grant PhD programs, if I remember right.
Well, now my alma mater does, and they're still a college, so.
Is it that just one... their name, though? I thought to be a university, you had to technically grant PhDs.
I think you can be a college and grant PhDs, but you cannot be a university and grant
PhDs. There we go.
So you can be a college that gives them, but you cannot be a university who doesn't give them.
There you go.
That makes sense.
So no, it should be a good game. Get your BTN Plus geared up if you don't have it already. I still need to
give Delaney those bucks before he retires. Come on, guys.
Oh god, yeah.
And
yeah.
Gals.
Yeah, we don't want Delaney to have a bad retirement. He gave us Rutgers.
Yeah. Yep. You can make sure to reward Delaney for giving us Rutgers, everybody. You sign up for that BTN Plus subscription now.
You know the fact, you know that because we have Rutgers, there's probably another $5 million in that media market alone that goes to each school, right?
Pretty much. I mean, I don't know why that is, but they are in the New York City DMA, and so therefore...
It's the footprint. It's the footprint. It's not the people who watch. For all exactly. We know, nobody watches anything Rutgers. I'm not trying to belittle Rutgers, but Rutgers could have nobody watching their stuff. But the fact that BTN is being paid by New Jersey, New York, you know, Pennsylvania, that area, cable providers is why they got brought in.
So I mean, it's not even like anybody
watch Rutgers or could watch Rutgers. The Big Ten is still getting paid.
Exactly. I mean, the New York Jets exist. Please convince me that anybody actually watches them in New York City. You can't. That's exactly the point. People still end up doing that. It's called bundling. It's why cable is losing out to cord cutting. So,
yeah, that's a good point. Who watches the Jets anymore? Other than really, really old Alabama fans.
Exactly.
if I'm not going to explain that joke if you don't get it at home, folks.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Well, I mean, it could be worse. You could be a Lions fan. If you watch the Lions, you just hate yourself. Welcome to being a Lions fan, everybody. That's
well. It depends. Do you own a Kid Rock album?
I don't own an album, but I'm not going to pretend like I don't have a couple Kid Rock songs on my phone in my iTunes. So,
well, there you go. I'm trying to think of major, like, nationally known Lions fans. And Kid Rock comes first.
Yeah, you know, I've been to a Lions Thanksgiving Day game, which for everybody out there who's complaining, this is next week, so that's I'm going to go off cool. on a tangent of a sport that doesn't exist, mind you. But the Lions are the ones that started Thanksgiving Day football tradition.
That
They've
is
always
true.
Lost, pretty much. I think they have like a plus 70% losing percentage in these games. But that's also a Lions tradition. And I've been to one Lions Thanksgiving Day game in my life. And the halftime show, Nickelback.
Oh.
But Sue stomped on a Green Bay Packers player.
Oh, man,
in that
I
game.
Wish Nate was on this podcast right now. He's a huge Nickelback fan.
I do remember you guys talking about Nickelback earlier this summer in one of the podcasts. And I was like, I had to go to a game with them.
Two-thirds of this podcast has seen Nickelback live.
It was not one of their better performances, but Sue stomped on, I think, Aaron Rodgers that game. If it wasn't Aaron Rodgers, it was a Green Bay Packers fan player who did deserve it. So
it was, I think it was a lineman, if I remember right. I remember that game.
Yeah, there was a different game where he stomped on Aaron Rodgers, and I was totally a fan of that, but I'm pretty sure it was like a lineman for the Thanksgiving Day game.
Oh God, yeah. No, that was not ideal. But yeah, no, that's cool. I mean, is just curiosity wise, I mean, Lions, you know, if you follow sports, if you follow the NFL, you know that Thanksgiving Day games are big. The Cowboys, I think, almost always play too. But like, what goes into that game? Like, what are the festivities around the Thanksgiving Day game for the Lions?
So they do a Thanksgiving Day parade in Detroit proper, and then there's the game, and that's more or less it as far as I know. So I mean, you usually do kind of a fun turkey spoof hat kind of thing if you want to try and get on TV. But that's about it. It's pretty much just the parade and the game for the Lions. We're the early game in the day. Then it's the Giants, or not the Giants, I'm sorry, the Cowboys. And I think usually the Giants end up with the night game, but I don't think they have the dedicated Thanksgiving Day game. I think more often than not, it's the Giants for the third game of the day. But
it's not the tradition that it is in Detroit.
Exactly. We're the team that started it. So, you know,
how many years has it been?
I want to say the first one was probably in the 30s, actually.
Oh, wow.
Like, it's an old tradition. Like, and
60s. Okay. All right.
I want to say the first game was back in the 30s. I'm not going to say that every single year after that was a Thanksgiving Day game. But the first one started, I'm pretty sure, back in the 30s era. If anybody wants to Google it and correct me on that, I'm not going to do it during the podcast and be 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure it was the 30s. So it's pretty old, and they lost the first game pretty badly. So
who they lose to?
I do remember that part. I have no idea, to be honest.
A team that's no longer around.
Probably, yeah. So
that's pretty.
At least they didn't lose to Jim Harbaugh.
The last couple decades, the Lions have not exactly been the most favorable of NFL teams, but that tradition alone is pretty cool. The fact that they've done that every year on Thanksgiving for this long.
Exactly. For everybody who complains, why do we have to watch the Lions lose on Thanksgiving? Well, we've been doing it since the 1930s. It's an American tradition at this point.
Our grandparents watched it when they were kids.
Exactly. So if you don't like it, then maybe you should try and force the Ford family to sell the Lions to somebody who won't turn them from a franchise that used to win championships prior to the NFL to a team and franchise that has won one playoff game in the Super Bowl era. One playoff game in the entire Super Bowl era.
Cleveland, listen up.
One more joke about this. There's a great genie joke, actually, or like a magical fairy joke thing that popped up earlier this season. Somebody came across a fairy who could grant one wish. And they said, well, I want to live forever. And the fairy said, well, no, it doesn't work that way. You don't, like, that's not how the rules are. You got to wish for something else. I wish I can die the second after the Lions win the Super Bowl. You crafty bastard, was the response.
Oh. I've learned more about Detroit than I ever thought I would tonight.
Well, on the bright side, at least nobody is going to make jokes about that at the end of the Fred Hoiberg era, because we're going to have an NCAA tournament win under him at some point. Not this season, but at some point.
Yeah, no, it's no. Let's go for two or three. Hey, you know what? I would put money on beating Northwestern this year.
Yeah, they're my preseason preview of saying, hey, they might not actually be the basement team is not living up too well so far.
Yeah, no, if you think, for the folks playing at home who don't follow or haven't been following that much, if you think Northwestern's football team's offense can't score, you should check out their basketball team this year.
Yeah.
It's
bad.
We'll wait till we get into conference play to get too much into it, but no, Northwestern, their peak of beating Nebraska and actually having an NCAA tournament win about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, that might as well have been 30 years ago right now. Their play, yeah, we don't have it that bad right now, folks.
Yeah. I will admit, prior to this week, this is Tuesday night, so prior to the game tonight, they did have their one loss to Providence Friars, who did have 23 AP votes. But their opponent tonight is not a AP ranked team or even one receiving votes, and it was not pretty. Oh God! Now you're putting me on the spot.
I just know, like, it's.
I remember the fact that they went 1 of 17 after the 16-minute mark in the first half, but I don't remember who it was that they actually played.
It was Radford. They got beat 67-56.
Yeah, this is. Oh God, that's terrible. And I mean, this isn't even a basketball score for Wisconsin versus Virginia. Like,
well, their first loss was to Merrimack, 71-61. And then, yeah, they beat Providence, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I said that they lost to Providence. I was wrong. I'm sorry, Northwestern listeners. I got that flipped. It was they had a 20-10 turnover margin against them and still managed to win. That was what it was.
Yeah, Providence had a terrible night.
Yeah. I mean, how do you have a 100% turnover margin advantage over your opponent and while receiving AP votes and still lose to them? I get it's early in the season, but wow.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I mean, that's exactly it. If you want to play defense, go to Northwestern.
Yeah. If you want to read books in the stands too, also go to Northwestern.
You know, that's not a bad scenario. I wouldn't mind going to football games that were boring enough to football, basketball, even baseball to where I could read a book. That wouldn't be a bad situation.
I'm actually far more excited about bucket listing their basketball arena after they renovated it than I am of going back to properly bucket list it for football.
I've heard good things about their new arena. Yeah.
Yeah, they sunk a lot of money into it.
They've sunk a lot of money into everything but the football stadium.
Pretty much, yeah. Let's hope that's the next thing with their Delaney Bucks that they'll do. So,
yeah, I mean, they've even got a nice little baseball stadium for, you know, top-level high schools.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of promise with sort of like the fun old Gothic style of the stadium. Mm-hmm. It's just, yeah, I mean, when you go up against UMass and have tickets going for $0 on the secondary market, it's tough to really warrant doing too much with it. So,
yeah.
Other than reducing capacity.
Yeah. No, I think if they just, all they need to do is upgrade their stadium, just make it nicer, I think they'd have more people show up, don't you?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing would be do away with the end zone seating, as much as I hate that, saying that rather, because I have a weird bias of, I love actual enclosed stadiums on all end zones, which is something that the Big Ten has an advantage of over the SEC, by the way. So suck it, SEC. We have more enclosed stadiums than you do in football.
You know why that is? It's because when you get up north and you get up into the October, November football games, you need those enclosed stadiums to keep the wind out.
You're telling me SEC teams can't play in the cold and the wind in November?
Blasphemy, you know, Patrick. I saw a joke on Twitter not too long ago. It's, you know, not everybody want, you know, why is it, you know, the SEC and stuff like that? Why do they have so many better players? They keep players at home because, you know, players don't want to go up and play in the, you know, frozen tundra. Well, on the flip side, not everybody wants to play in a fat man's hairy armpit either, so.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, it goes both ways. So, anyway, there's our SEC slam for the day. So.
Yep. It's basketball season. Basically, we can throw shade at them, so.
Hey, well, let's be honest. SEC, the last year or two, has had some, they've had some pretty decent basketball schools. It's not just Kentucky anymore.
Fairly true. Although I will say this, despite being good friends with an LSU fan, LSU did cheat to get good, and I guarantee you Auburn cheated to get good. But
Auburn brought in Bruce Pearl. They're by far better than they've been in a long time because of him, but let's just do some math on there.
Yeah, what are the odds that that's, you know, not going to get stripped away someday?
Exactly. But, you know, Florida's becoming a better team. Tennessee made a heck of a run last year in the tournament. I think they made the Sweet 16, what, Elite 8, something like that.
Yeah, Arkansas has some good years and some bad years. They definitely have some good runs.
I think they're still working their way up.
Yeah, and, you know, Georgia does have an Izzo acolyte in Tom Crean, who had some success doing well at Marquette. There. Yeah, so mixed far. Bag at Indiana, doing well at Georgia. So South Carolina just had their first Final Four run, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah. The benefit of him is he's a good coach. He just doesn't have he won't have the Indiana baggage looming over him at Georgia.
Yeah. If you want to talk about that, Nebraska football, just, Indiana. Just
psychologically, that will benefit him greatly.
Yeah.
So Anyway, that's all I got for tonight, man.
Yep, same here.
Cool. Right. Well, thank you all for listening. Hopefully next week we will have our co-host, Nate, along with us. We've yet to do a, I think it's the Five Heart Podcast calls it a tripod.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep. Yep, that's their language. We'll have to come up with a... Yeah.
So, when we all three to get together, we will think of a better name for it. But anyway... We'll need
a Bangarang and Daggers three-point team. How about that? Three-man weave. Play. There we go. Three-man weave. It's a great fast break move.
Three-man weave. That's it.
Yeah.
Hopefully by next week, we have our own three-man weave.
Yeah, there we go.
Thanks for listening, folks. Mm-hmm.